Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an NBA Finals Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brunson holding up high against Vassell. Now cuts to the left, free throw line. Hops back, digs in, shot up, and good! Brunson, big bucket, 37 seconds to go.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brandon Sprague, NBA Finals Week on The Fan is brought to you by Video Only. For the best deals on Samsung, LG, and Sony TVs, shop Video Only. Or you'll be sorry. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 FM and 1080 AM, The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here on 105.1 The Fan and The Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Happy Wednesday, everybody.
Not trying to be a chotch.
No, we are not.
No chotches.
No, we are not. I hope your Wednesday's off to a rip-roaring start. We certainly have had a lot of fun. Dirt is a cat daddy now.
Yeah, I got a week of cat duty. Don't screw it up.
Remember the cat daddy dance?
I do remember the cat daddy dance.
With Kate Upton?
I do, yes. Who could forget cat daddy?
That was quite a video.
Cat daddy was a moment in time.
Yes,
I think
was.
I was in college when cat daddy came out. I remember it well.
I thought we were doing a show together when that came out.
Were we doing our show together when
Pretty
that came
sure
out?
That
were
was we? When we started okay. doing our night show, yeah.
Okay, well, I wasn't too shortly after college for me.
Touche, that is correct. We have a lot to get to in the second hour of the radio program. You can reach us at 503-864-6326. That's the fan text line. You can also chime in on Twitter. We have two poll questions up today. Nice early start, easy breezy. The first poll question is simply, what will happen first to at the Dirt Johnson? Getting a family cat or a family Disneyland trip? Right now, family cat winning. Mm. And what percentage of cats are evil demons? 33% or 67%? You could vote at Dirt and Sprague. 67% is winning.
I too voted for getting a family cat first. That's my vote. I would rather do that than go to Disneyland.
We are all well aware of that. I think you could deal with a cat. Disneyland's a different level of expense.
Cat can be out of sight, out of mind. It's outdoor cat.
It's a stat or story Wednesday, so we'll get to that coming up in the final hour. We got game four of the NBA Finals. We may have a guest for that. I had booked somebody, but I'm trying to get the phone number, and they're not responding.
We got to get a response here in the next 25 minutes. Figure it out.
If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, we will move on. I actually want to start the second hour of the radio program with some local stuff.
Oh, what do we got?
Well, yesterday, Oregon State introduced their new VP and AD, Kevin Griffin.
Yes, they did.
The nephew of Archie Griffin at Ohio State. He comes from Ohio State with years and years of experience. And Swag, I'm assuming you didn't pull any audio cuts.
I did not.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We didn't ask you to. I didn't find anything really...
No.
You know, it's give us money, we're going to win. He did proclaim they're going to be the best program in the Pac-12, I believe. You know, that's kind of basically to sum it up. I didn't think there was a lot of, like, amazing things. I think athletic director press conferences are somehow even worse than coach ones of just like, I don't really get a lot from them.
It's hard to lose the press conference because you're going to say all the right things.
They just hired two of their, you know, debatably biggest coaches on their campus. So, like, that's going to have to wait on some time. Like, there's not a whole lot I think Kevin Griffin could have said yesterday, although, you know, I thought he had a good welcome speech and all that.
Without a doubt. There were some good anecdotes about, like, him growing up.
The only thing would have been if there was some announcement of some, I don't know, donation that came in, or they're breaking ground on
some. They just got a big donation.
Exactly. Yeah,
they just had a big donation. Yeah. I mean, the idea of them making NIL at the forefront of what they do as an athletic department, I did chuckle out of, like, welcome to the modern times.
Yeah, that's why
that
would have
been nice to be 5 years ago.
Yeah.
We
tried it. We had a blueprint for
you. And then the blueprint did not look like a good blueprint. His backstory of, like, having a Gary Payton cover of Sports Illustrated on his wall, I thought was kind of cool. Of, like, when did he first learn about Oregon State? And he was a big fan of GP back in the day. And so he had that SI cover-up. So little anecdotes like that can be fun. But we talked about it when he was hired. When you already have a football coach and a basketball coach, he has one job and one job only: raise money. And it's how do you do it? How does he go about doing it? I mean, it's not a very easy thing to talk about. It's a little complicated in the process. And so is he going to be good at that? Time will tell. But that's really his only responsibility.
So the other element of this to me is, like, what you do and how you raise money. It's nice that he did mention GP, as you noted. That was his first introductory into Oregon State.
Yeah.
Also noted Jade Carey and Steven Jackson. And
yes.
I think a big difference is going to be there won't be a phone call with a third-party entity representing your NIL, which is really just ripping you off, saying nobody cares about Gary Payton.
It's a name on the front of the jersey, not the back of the jersey that matters.
I don't think he's going to operate that way. He's coming from an institution that largely wants to tout all of the names that have come through their buildings and earn their Buckeye stars.
Right.
I think he's going to take a different approach than the last athletic director who had a phone call with Blueprint Sports, basically not caring about AC Green and Gary Payton.
We don't need your help.
Steve Johnson and Gary Payton.
Yeah, they wanted to help out, and it wasn't about the name on the back of the jersey. It's the name of the front on the jersey, guys. Remember that.
By the way, did you see that Blueprint Sport bro got hired as the AD at San Francisco?
Have fun with that, San Francisco.
Yeah, good luck to you on that one.
Things ended great when he was at Arizona and ended great when he was at Oregon State. I'm sure it'll be a terrific hire.
But I think you're right of, like, his job right now is to continue to build buzz and excitement. He noted fans, and I'm not a big believer in donating money to athletic institutions. I'm just not somebody that makes that kind of money, I think, to make a difference. So
yeah,
my $500 donation almost means nothing.
It's a drop in the bucket.
But it's, if you can get people to sign up for it and do it, like, that's great. Getting them excited about supporting the athletic department is important. I actually want to talk about something they're sort of tied into and give the proper credit here. Nick Daschle wrote an article at Oregon Live, and Griffin was asked about this yesterday's press conference. I want to get your thoughts. So Nick Daschle writes, Kevin Griffin's first decision at Oregon State should be to boot Texas Tech from their football schedule this year. And he was asked about it yesterday, Kevin Griffin, and he wouldn't really name Sorsby or what the incident was. It was a weird dance around, in my opinion.
Instead of just saying what he was accused of and what he was,
he goes,
why
we
he
all
might
know
have
what's being talked about and that deal. But he said he's going to talk with Teresa Gould, the commissioner of the Pac-12 that's going to take start this coming season. I read this article, and my initial thought is the money involved with the game. How much does it cost to get out of the game? But I completely agree with the entire opinion. He said this is not an easy call. It's the marquee home game of your entire football season. Texas Tech coming in is going to generate a lot of buzz. The fans are going to show up from Texas. Everybody that is a Beaver fan probably going to want to go to that home game because that's the biggest team who may go to a playoff.
If you're buying season tickets, that's the biggest draw.
But this is where I think he is right. Oregon State has largely, I think, not done a good job since the Pac-12's died. You can give them credit in little ways around, hey, the baseball stayed independent. They didn't want to join the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. That's fine. But the football hire was a disaster. Basketball just plateaued because largely it wasn't being financially supported. They got this war chest of money that doesn't seem to be an actual war chest of used money.
Right.
So, like, I looked at just what has happened post it and how much positive PR has the university had.
Not a lot.
This is where I think I agree with Daschle of, boy, you want to build buzz for yourself, get support, and maybe be the start of something. Be the first program to say, to hell with that game. We're not playing you. This cat shouldn't be eligible.
Right.
Now, he is suspended for the game.
He is not playing in the game.
But I think it's more of a fundamental, I agree with the idea of, like, imagine if Oregon State did announce, we have bought out and we have canceled this game. We'll reschedule and let you know. They probably won't do it, but I do agree with the take. And I talk about a hell of a first move for Kevin Griffin if he decided to do that.
It would be a bold first move. Not financially speaking, the best decision, at least in the short term, although maybe to your point, in the long term, it ends up bringing more positive news stories and you can schedule the game with somebody else. I'm not exactly sure how that would play out. The tough part with it is I got a couple of things. So I noticed that yesterday. I knew this was going to become a thing that Oregon State will have to decide on. Where do we put the percentage chance that something ends up happening where you know, the Big 12 ADs come together and they want to kick Texas Tech out of the conference, and Texas Tech has no choice but to not play him, right? Like,
there was a report that's going to happen.
All the ADs in the conference are saying, no, we're not going to do this. Yeah. And so what are the percentage chances of right now we even acknowledging that Brendan Sorsby might not play next year?
Which is very fair.
Right, it might not happen. And so in that case, it ends up being a disaster if you cancel the game and he ends up getting suspended for the rest of the time. I certainly understand your point about the good PR that it would create. And I think that's a valid argument of Oregon State has not had a lot of successful stories written about them over the last handful of years. It's been a lot of ugliness. It's been a lot of your AD's incompetent. Your president doesn't know what they're doing.
Like, what's their most positive thing post the Pac-12 conference dying? Like, what is it? I'm asking legitimately. Name it. What is it? And if it's baseball,
Ruick making the tournament the first year after losing his entire Final Four team, and they were the WCC, and they made the NCAA. They were like, that was pretty crazy that he did that.
Yeah, that's
baseball
a very fair
team
one.
Went to Omaha last
baseball
year.
Baseball team yeah, found their way to one. Omaha yeah. the first year without a conference.
Yeah, so baseball.
There's been some
Omaha
minor
stuff.
Successes, yeah. But in terms of like positive PR, to your point, I think you're spot on in that angle. Here's the hard part that I have with mm-hmm. it: the entire system has been broken and ugly for a while.
It has, yeah.
And there are two programs in this country who have been almost singled out and kicked in the nuts unintentionally and intentionally more than literally any other program in the country. Mm-hmm. And it's Oregon State and Washington State. You can say the Big 12 schools don't have the same standing because they lost Oklahoma and Texas. You're fine. They still have power conference status. It's not the same thing. You guys were left behind by a system. And then to turn around and ask you to do the right thing when dollars and cents mean more to your university and athletic than they ever have.
Yeah.
And when you look at the rest of the home schedule, there's not a lot on there if I'm a season ticket buying fan that's going to want to draw me to a game. And if you cancel that game, mm-hmm. who in our head do we think you're scheduling in their place?
Okay, so that's the kind of the counter, because I thought you would say that. And that's a good point, a very valid reason, right?
I'm like, not if I already paid for my season tickets yes. and I found out all of a sudden, like,
Texas Tech was
there's
off?
A brief, like, hey, good for you, but what the hell, dude? What am I paying for?
But what if it's a team that you think you got a great chance to beat? Right? Because fans have to weigh now in this weird landscape of 12 team. Is it 24? Is it 16?
Yeah. Do you want to see a household program or do you want to see a Cal Poly and
you
win by 30?
I mean, how many wins do you need? You're in the first year of the conference. Yeah. This guy is the new guy and he's saying, we're going to be the top program in the conference.
Yeah.
Okay. You have now set the bar for me. And I love that he's willing to set the bar like that. But to be the top program, you need a lot of what? You need a lot of dubs.
Yeah.
Texas Tech is going to absolutely obliterate you.
Likely
with or
will.
Without Brendan Sorsby.
Likely will.
They are a loaded-ass team that is the favorite in the Big 12. But right now, and I totally get, like, this may not happen, largely probably will not happen. I just read it, and I'm like, I think it'd be, one, you couldn't buy better PR than that,
mm-hmm.
and you'd probably literally be buying it. Two, your point on the season ticket holders or people that have bought tickets for that trip already or that game, very valid. Very valid. But I also think fans are smart enough in this climate to understand we need to stack wins. Are Indiana podcasts and based radio shows, are they arguing at each other about making the non-conference
no.
tougher?
No.
No, because they want three automatic no. dubs, even if it kind of sucks.
Right.
And then go into the Big Ten and see what Cignetti's going to do.
The counter to that, though, is that Indiana's got USC and Ohio State and Michigan on the
totally
schedule down
that.
The road.
Well, Oregon State's going to have to play Boise State.
That's not a terrible
Texas
game.
State's been an okay program, right?
It's your only game of the season that's on network television.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the only one.
Yes.
It's on CBS. Every other game is, you have one on the ESPN, a lot of USA Network, and then one on the CBS Sports Network and the
right.
CW.
Yeah, but that was always going to be your lot in life.
Without
that was
doubt.
Not going to Texas Tech, you know, for whatever. So my whole point is just simply like to be
I see the argument. I get it. I see the point.
It would be quite the move. Again, I don't think he's going to do it. It's just
right.
an interesting thought of like imagine if he came out and did it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It creates a lot of good PR. You're not wrong
I'm
there.
Not sure there is a lot of fan backlash. In fact, I wonder if they almost drum up even more excitement of.
Be a good poll question today for Beaver fans.
It's a new era of to hell with all this crap. We're not putting up with it.
Yeah.
We're going to do what's best for us, and we're not playing with a program letting that kid play.
It's the
even
tough.
If he's
could they
for
put
our
something
game.
Together? Could they call Abilene Christian and say, hey, if you're going to drop them, we'll pick you up and that sort of thing?
If we both drop them, can we just play each other? That's fine.
It's the weird. It reminds me kind of the segments we do on the Civil War, where I see both sides of it, of the argument of we don't want to play the game because of all the stuff that transpired and Oregon leaving us behind. And I totally understand that point of it. I also get the other side of the financial impact of, like, you're going to sell the game out. It's going to be on national television.
Yep.
And you're in a conference where there's just not going to be a lot of those opportunities before. When you're in a bigger conference, I will make a mockery of it and joke about it. The teams who don't want to play anybody, but you know in your hip pocket you got three or four games that matter down the stretch, that if you're a season ticket holder, you could tell yourself, all right, that's kind of a dumb game. I don't want to see us beat Old Dominion by 70 points, but we got Ohio State and USC and Oregon and Michigan and Penn State, whoever it is, down the stretch on our schedule. Like, the rest of your home schedule after that is Montana, San Diego State.
That's not an awful one.
Not
for,
terrible.
For them,
it's not terrible. Washington State, right? So you got some familiarity there. Texas State and Utah State.
Yeah.
That's the rest of your home schedule. And so let's play swag scenario out, as all of a sudden I've paid a price for season tickets. I don't know what would be more important to me as a fan, because I see your point about stacking up wins. I guess I wouldn't have that expectation in year one for a new coach. That would be more of like a year two thought of like easier wins. And also, the reality is you're never going to make it as an at-large bid in the current format. That just won't happen. You're going to have to win your conference, and losing the Texas Tech game doesn't impact that.
Yeah,
you just if you get killed,
depends what your record is.
There's another team.
Totally
fair. But it's also like you have to win whether you want to make it or not, or even be in the conversation or not. You got to win your conference, and it's not a conference game that will count against that standing. And so I certainly understand both sides of it. I don't know what side of the fence I would be on if I were a fan. I would tend to think, even knowing the chances that we're probably going to get killed in the game, I'd rather see a marquee game, national TV, Brad Nessler's in town calling it on CBS.
What if it's like last year's, though? What if it's like 45 to nothing?
It's not fun, but then you're rolling the dice of what if it's not? What if the game's tied going into the fourth quarter because Sorsby's not playing and Will Hammond's not? He's the starting quarterback and he throws two picks and the crowd gets into the game.
I've seen some great stuff at Reser before in years past as a student and after, but
I'm certainly not going to pick on the game.
I just don't think that's in any way feasible.
I get it. I totally get it. We've also seen games where Washington State went on the road and played Ole Miss last year in year one of their new head coach with a roster that we didn't think was going to win more than three games, and they had a chance to win the game with
the
ball in their hand on the road at Oxford, and Ole Miss was a play away from going to the national championship
now
game.
I believe, if I'm not wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, that was before they made the Chambliss switch, right? That was
I don't
early.
Remember who started that game. I'll go find
Chambliss
that.
Came in a game or two after that because they weren't playing very well with that Simmons kid.
I'll go find him.
Correct the record on that. But that's a very valid thing.
It's just the point of, like, you never know what could happen.
Right.
And imagine the, like, you're talking good PR for canceling the game, which you were 100% spot on. Imagine the PR that's going on in that game if you have a lead.
If you're keeping it
tight. In the third quarter, it's 24-21, and, like, what's the nation saying?
Right.
This is top 10 Texas Tech, who's playing nobody in non-conference and nobody in conference because they don't even have BYU on their schedule.
Certainly.
And you're taking them down to the wire. It becomes a whole other thing.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Chambliss did play in the game, by the way.
Did he start?
He was their starter.
Okay.
I don't know if it was the first game he started. It was 20 of 29, 253, two tuds.
Washington State, that was a shocking game.
It was just a game where Ole Miss didn't take him seriously. They had, who did they have the week
after? That's the argument
after.
For the Texas Tech game staying, right? It's like Texas Tech doesn't have Sorsby, but they look at Oregon State and they're like, that team was 2-10 last year.
I want to say they played Georgia. Yeah, they played Georgia the very next week.
That's
and
right.
And went on the road to Athens. So it was and they played LSU the week before and beat them. It was a complete sandwich. Like,
there is
also the
something
Cougs
different
are here,
than
like,
traveling to a place, though, and you're like, I don't care about this team, but now I'm here.
Yeah.
Versus,
yeah.
like, hosting the garbage team,
that's right,
in
I think
their
this,
opinion.
I would have 100% agreement with you if this was last year and the game
at
was
Texas
at, like,
Tech?
Dude, screw you, we're not coming down to get our asses beat for a payday. Our fans don't care about this game. None of them are really traveling.
Right.
It's Lubbock. Nobody wants to go to Lubbock, Texas. Then I would be in 100% agreement with you. I think it's just tough. I'm curious where, like, the majority of fans would be at, because I understand both sides of it. The PR and an easier win versus the payday, the national television, and a bigger marquee opponent if you're a fan buying a ticket.
Well, let me ask you this before we go to Andrew Claudio of Nick's Film School. If they did it, which, again, I'm not really convinced they will. It's just the money involved with all of it. But if they did it, what would the reaction be around the sport? If they were the first school of all of these schools to
say, it
would
create a buzz and a wave, without
no,
a doubt.
We do not stand for this.
Yeah.
You are the first one. Does it change the Texas Tech viewpoint? We have the ADs in the Big 12 all saying what they're saying, but so far there's been no fallout of it. And you're right, he may not end up playing, but it'd just be very interesting to see what would the reaction be if Oregon State announced tomorrow.
Yeah.
We've actually decided as a conference and an institution, we don't stand for that, even if he is suspended. The fact that he is eligible this season,
it would create a ripple effect across the sport, and you would be talked about wall-to-wall across all platforms.
Just something
for how long? I don't know. And are you the first? Is it like a ripple that leads to a wave? Who knows?
I don't know. I have no clue.
Is it, does the story die in a couple of days? We don't know, but you're 100% spot on that it would create a wave of positive PR, I think, for your program in the short term.
Well, to be fair, not my take. That's Nick Daschle's take at Oregon Live. I thought it was an interesting point of, like, this guy's new. He only has to do right now is fundraise because everybody's been hired.
Right.
Boy, you want to make waves.
It's one of those you go to your boosters and ask what's more important to you. And if they tell you that it's canceling the game, then you cancel the game.
Let's move on. NBA Finals Game 4. We go to New York. Andrew Claudio of Knicks Film School Podcast is going to join us coming up next to talk about Game 4 between Wemby and the Knicks on 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, what's up, Flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back in. Hello. Happy Wednesday, everybody. A lot more to get on to. We have the Status Story Wednesday, but we move on from Kevin Griffin in Oregon State. We've got Knicks Game 4, Spurs
Game
4. We
do. The party is back out in front of MSG.
Well, that was an ugly scene around New York City after
yes,
Game 3. Those videos that were circulating on the internet were not kind.
No. A couple of bad apples always make an entire fan base give them a bad reputation. That's the tough part about it.
The Parisi, the Steezy at Game 3, not going to be at Game 4. So will that change any vibes for the New York Knicks? We'll have to see tonight as we await to get on Andrew Claudio of Knicks Film School, the podcast. You can catch him on Twitter at Andrew J. Claudio. Swags, get him on the horn right now as Knicks and Spurs Game 4. Andrew, good morning. Thanks for hopping on. I know it's a busy week, a busy time for you guys over there. The NBA Finals has been crazy. It's been great. How much do you put on nerves, the president, just kind of all of what Game 3 became on the start of what the New York Knicks were in the first quarter of Game 3?
Well, good morning to both of you, and happy to be here still talking about Knicks basketball in the month of June.
it's been a while.
Yeah, you could say that again. Nerves, slow start. I'd put angst, maybe anticipation could be part of it. The circus that became for the fans, I think, is more why a lot of national people are saying it wasn't the Knicks A-plus crowd. The Madison Square Garden crowd wasn't the best. I also think there's just something to the fact that this wasn't just the Knicks trying to win a third game in the NBA Finals. They were trying to win their 14th game in a row. Like, the team was the most due for a performance like that I think any playoff team had ever been. And they still only lost by 4 points despite so much going wrong at the beginning of the game, the beginning of the third, the foul trouble they got into, the good play by the Spurs. So a lot of factors were involved, and that's more so where I've gone to with what happened in Game 3.
I'm curious where the fan base is at. Like, I feel like we have a lot of similarities sans market size of, like, hey, we won a championship in the 70s. It's been a long time. Couple of finals appearances. One not really competitive, one more competitive. But, you know, it's been a while since the team has been in the finals. So I'm wondering, like, if I were in your shoes as a Blazer fan in this moment and we're up 2-1, would I feel confident? Would I feel uneasy? Like, is this our – I'm just like, where is the fan base at going into Game 4 knowing a win tonight? You never say never because LeBron did it and the Spurs are certainly a great team, but very rare that a team comes back from down 3-1 knowing the implications of what a win could mean tonight.
So it's funny. You talk about the history that'll be on your side with a win tonight. And yet, I don't think a single Knicks fan, even after going up 2-0 and the history that's on your side, winning two road games to start the finals, matters. The Knicks PTSD is very real. Every Knicks fan that I've talked to, that I've interacted with, that I might even be part of that crowd, knows what has happened to this fan, to this history, to this franchise, and to this fan base over the years. Look no further than 1 year ago when Tyrese Halliburton broke our hearts in game one of the conference finals. It's just been a long time, and sometimes it hasn't been at all for this fan base to see that the bad thing doesn't happen. And it's why when Wemby's shot in game two missed, it was a reaction from the majority of the fan base. It's like, oh, it didn't go in. That shot actually didn't fall. So I think the focus has now, I can't stress this enough, now that the winning streak's over, you're just back in a series, in a playoff series. And, oh, look, it's the NBA Finals. And this team has played so well for so long that there is a confidence, I think, in most of the fan base that this team will show up, correct a lot of the mistakes that happened in Game 3, and get the job done tonight. And then you're looking at 3 to win 1, including one home game, to become NBA champions. So there is a nervousness because of the laundry list of bad things that have happened to this franchise. But I do think there is at least a spark of confidence that they'll get the job done.
Yeah, Andrew Claudio is our guest here, Knicks Film School podcast, one of the top-ranked, if not the top-ranked, Knicks-based podcasts, doing good stuff over there. Joining us here for the NBA Finals preview of Game 4. A lot was said after Game 3. I look, you don't know what the result's going to be tonight, to your point of, like, is there momentum? Is there not momentum? Knicks fans, they won the first two. Okay, let's see. I don't know who's going to win tonight, Andrew, but is there something or someone that you feel sure will be different in Game 4?
Well, the very easy answer is Mikal Bridges, because I don't know how you could be worse, or more specifically, less of a factor in Game 3. I think it's really underrated. I think the national conversation, I haven't heard it brought up as much. Like, he had two fouls and left the game 3 minutes into the game. The slow start that you talk about the Knicks getting off to, I also thought the fast start that the Spurs got off to was largely contributed to the fact that the Knicks' best point of attack defender wasn't in the game for 9 minutes of the first quarter, and it allowed Steph Castle to get past that first line of defense. It allowed the Spurs to go hunting for Jalen Brunson, because it was Landry Shamet navigating those screens and not one of the best point of attack defenders in the sport. He's also one of the best off-ball defenders in the sport. And, oh yeah, he was averaging like 16 points a game since game three of the first round of the playoffs. So as long as Mikal Bridges doesn't get into foul trouble right away and have to leave the game at the beginning and can give you what he's been giving on the offensive side of the ball, I have to think that the Knicks will be in a much better spot. I mean, you can go to Karl Anthony Towns and what he wasn't in the second half compared to what he was in the first half, and hopefully he can put a full game together. The irony is, like, the Jalen Brunson conversation, he's not being efficient, and I think it's largely a credit to the Spurs and how they're guarding him, and specifically how Steph Castle is guarding him very aggressively. It's a reminder of the first round when Jalen was matched up against Dyson Daniels for six games and largely struggled to be efficient in that series. I still think he's shown up every fourth quarter. So he's showing up at the end of games where it matters and where Captain Clutch, as he's been named here in New York, has been doing his best work. I just listed a bunch of different margins that they lost in the last games. I think if you just clean it up there, he'll be in better shape. But Mikal Bridges getting 2 points in 29 minutes and five fouls, you missed so much that he had been giving you for a solid 6 weeks in this game. And I have to think, as long as the fouls don't show up again in this one, the Knicks will be in much better shape.
Yeah, it's a great point on what he took. Well, lost defensively there at the start of that game. I'm curious, in the aftermath of it, there's always a fine line between the blaming officials or taking onus of the loss. Is there truth on both sides? I actually love what Brown said of, like, you might as well send the message out there, see if it impacts the foul calls in Game 4. What do we make of just the narrative around officiating, and how much is that a thing for Knicks fans?
So, I'm going to do my best to be as for your show and unbiased as possible.
Hold on. No.
We don't care.
We got you on this show to be you. I don't care if you're a homer. Be a honk. If you feel that way, let us know.
There is the reaction I had the moment the game ended, the moment that the Knicks picked up whichever Nick picked up their fifth foul while the Spurs had one guy get to four last game. There's the fact that they had a pretty terrible whistle in game two. So for them to also have a pretty terrible whistle in game three, I don't think the Knicks have got a great whistle in the finals so far. Do I think the Spurs and do I think the rest have established a baseline perimeter defense that both teams are allowed to play? Yes. I'm sure if I went and rewatched the game, which of course I didn't rewatch game three.
Right.
But I'm sure if I did, there would be calls on both sides that I would say, okay, the Knicks got away with that. The Spurs didn't get away with that. I'm trying to be as fair. However, the Wemby mush of Brunson that wasn't upgraded to a flagrant and was missed in real time after he did it to Jose Alvarado in game two, nothing being done to combat that. It's a thing. It is very much a thing. And it's honestly a thing that teams have done to the Knicks over this run. During the Tibbs era, this happened too, where like the Orlando Magic or the Detroit Pistons or other teams would think, hey, we can bully this team. And largely what the Knicks' response has always been is, we'll beat you with the scoreboard. It's why the Pistons were eliminated last year. It's why the Magic, they'll bully the Knicks for one game in the regular season, then lose the next three regular season games against them. And it's what I think the Knicks are going to try and do in this series. Wemby's a little bit of a different obstacle to literally climb in that sense. So I think they're going to have a much more difficult time in doing that. But look, I don't think they've gotten a great whistle. I don't. And the free throw disparity in the second half being 24-8, I'm sorry. That's just not the game that I watched was not a game that dictated or spoke to a team needing to have more free throws or shoot or earning more free throws in that sense than the Knicks did. It wasn't the fairest of whistles. I want to be clear. It's not why I thought they lost the game. It's on the list. It's just not the main reason I thought they lost the game.
Is a man who works on the Knicks Film School podcast, if you can't tell.
I mean, that's the way to say it, though. It's never the primary reason, but I don't think
it's a part of the story.
We're unbiased watching from the West Coast in Portland, Oregon, and even we're yelling at our TV of this is ridiculous, man.
Well, dude, can I ask you this then? You're right to say it's not why they lost the game, but you are also right to point out the free throw discrepancy is pretty crazy.
How do you not upgrade the Wemby push in the back?
The other thing. We've kind of learned Wemby's a dirty player.
Yes.
He's not the dirtiest player, but
he's 7'4" Dylan Brooks, dude.
He has these moments where you're like, that was super unnecessary, and we saw it with the Brunson shove. I want to ask you about the physicality of this. Now, I am 39. I'm going to be 40 in December. So I'm in a weird sweet spot age, Andrew, where I have people older than me just talk about nothing but 80s and 90s NBA basketball as if nobody's been better athletes and there's no other era of basketball that will ever compete against it because of physicality. And I'm sitting over here as somebody who coaches youth basketball watching it actually it's faster, it's physical. Basketball nowadays is harder to play than it was in the 80s and 90s despite Bill Laimbeer. I think it's even too physical. I think this series has been way too physical for both. We're watching guys constantly shove each other at all times, both ends of the court. And I think it's making it really hard for these refs to officiate and determine, that physicality is different than that other physicality. What do you think physical-wise in this series? Has it been too much, or do you think they've done a relatively good job letting it be as physical as it has been?
Well, first of all, the 7'4" Dylan Brooks is very funny. And what I came up with yesterday on our show was Joel Embanyama. So I don't know if that'll catch on or not. The Knicks have dealt with a center throwing cheap shots in the past. So hopefully they send this one home too. You just said it. The arguments I get when I go to a family function and some of my mom and dad's brothers and sisters, so my aunts and uncles or second cousins that bring up how physical the 90s were or the 80s were. And as a Knicks fan, it gets brought up the Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason, that era of the NBA, the Pat Riley Knicks, and how physical it was. And there were enforcers back then. And the difference today is those enforcers all need to be able to run at a pace that just did not exist back then. They need to be able to shoot threes, that a thing that wasn't emphasized as much back then. And you could just have a guy on your team that's just there to rebound. Now you kind of have to be able to play basketball. And I think that's the biggest difference in the eras today. As far as this series is concerned, I'm okay with them letting it play. The last thing I would ever want is for the officials to be deciding games. You know, I do think that it's been a little physical on the Spurs side. It's been allowed to be a little more physical on the Spurs side. Again, trying to be as unbiased as possible, though, the difference is that, like, as dirty as Wemby can be, by 100% agreement, like, he's actually not the, like, most physical defense. Like, Carl Anthony Towns has bullied him in specific spots.
Yeah.
In this series. Why he's been able to dominate at certain points on the offensive end. I've actually thought Wemby, like, when he keeps his hand to himself, is actually, like, very movable. You know, he's just tall. So it's tough to shoot over him. He's the greatest and most impactful rim protector I've literally ever seen because he's taller than the rim. So the Knicks paint a game that they've been really dominating for the first three rounds of the playoffs has disappeared, except when Karl Anthony Towns is matched up with Wemby and he's able to either get by him, which he has been successfully, or when they bring him away from he brings him away from the rim because he's a threat from the outside, and the Knicks are able to be much quicker with their actions and attack a different way. I'd also say that OG Anunoby just has no fear, and so if he sees Wemby guarding him, he will go right at him at the rim, and he's been able to be successful there too. So I'm okay with the physicality. As long as it's like officiated a certain way that both teams are allowed to get away with the same amount, get called for the same amount, and blatant like cross checks to Jalen Brunson's face aren't missed. And I'm hoping we see that in game four.
Yeah. Good stuff. Andrew Claudio of Knicks Film School Podcast, getting ready for game four on Twitter at Andrew J. Claudio. Thanks for hopping on with us, man. We appreciate you being flexible with your schedule. Enjoy game four, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely. Go Knicks.
All right. There we go. Good stuff from Andrew Claudio. Went a little long on that one, so back with some reaction and thought. Game four is tonight. Dirt and Sprague, 105.1, The Fan.
Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters. Love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
We got a stat or story to get to in the final hour today. We got to get to that dirt.
We do. Got my number, got my story.
Mm.
Is that how that worked? My got stat and my story?
Yeah, you got your stat and your story. Yeah, your number and your story.
Sense. Yeah, makes sense. Sure.
Is it a stat or is it a true stat or story?
Tune in to find out.
That's always.
Could be a story. Maybe sometime I'm just going to throw a story at you, see how you react to it. Keep you on your toesies.
Do we get any free throw differences today in game four?
I would like to think that we do, that Mike Brown's efforts will be rewarded, rightfully so. Look, it's not I thought the way to spin it by Andrew was good. Like, it's not the biggest story of the series. It's not the reason San Antonio won game three. But yeah, like, when I'm watching the game and I see a shove in the back of the head, how often do you see a shove like that in an NBA game and there not be a whistle blown? So I just, and not to not upgrade the flagrant or to not upgrade anything on Wemby for that. I don't know how that's considered not a flagrant foul to just shove a guy who's a foot smaller than you in the back of the head towards the ground. Bit of a dirty play in my book. I would have upgraded the foul. I think there was a lean of the whistle towards San Antonio. I'm not arguing a conspiracy that the NBA did it because the ratings are high and they won a 7-game series. I just think sometimes it naturally happens. I also think Wemby is a unique guy to guard because he's so big and you're just going to have to be physical with him. That sometimes you get a little more trigger happy with the whistle. But yeah, I would hope when you have three straight games with a free throw disparity where it's been, and it's not like there's only one team shooting a bunch of threes and one team shooting around the rim, and that's why the disparity exists. Mm-hmm. The three-point attempts have been pretty similar by each team through the first three games. I hope there's a balance of the whistle, and usually when coaches go on rants to that level, you see a minor impact in the next game. But we'll find out tonight, because I thought it was a little San Antonio-sided last game.
I actually think that's the important thing to note here. Like, I know Mike Brown caught some flack from people, and I get it. Like, you lose, you don't want to be the loser who then goes and says, oh, the refs, the free throws. For a guy that is not largely known to be very vocal of a complainer.
Yeah, that's not his DNA.
For him to do it, I think maybe makes you raise an eyebrow or two. But also, let's play the fun fact of how many years in our lives did Phil Jackson do this kind of stuff?
Greg Popovich was the king at this in San Antonio.
This is how
complain
you do
the entire
it.
Game.
Yes.
Until you get the whistle on your side.
Then the post game,
yes.
Right? And the practice. Like, I don't know about these refs or letting so and so get away with it. Like, I'm just kind of curious to see if it's going to make a difference in the free throw numbers, because to Claudio's point, even if you think he's a Knicks honk, it didn't make or break the game. The Knicks shot poorly. The Spurs played incredible defense.
The Bridges two early fouls that you brought up on the show yesterday was a huge part of that first quarter.
He can't have 2 points. No. I said it. They're going to win the series. He has to score at least 15 or more in every game. And so I think game four may have a slightly different whistle. I think this is the Scott Foster game, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it is. That's Scott Foster's music that you hear. He's coming out of the tunnel.
Either the extender or the guy who may finish the series, because if the Knicks go up 3-1, I don't know if people still think the Spurs will come back from that. But
yeah, we've seen it done before, but pretty hard to do.
It'd certainly be a legendary moment for Wimby at age 22. But
yes, it would.
Tonight's game. Zach Zarba, James Williams, and Courtney Kirkland.
Oh, no Scott Foster.
No Scott Foster
so
tonight.
You should Zarba, get okay. a pretty even.
Well, usually when coaches complain, you don't get an even. It goes the other way.
Yeah,
it's
do
like,
you
oh,
trend
crap,
the other
right.
direction? It's an interesting question, though, about do you like the physicality? Because I see your point. There are times when there's a little like, dang, pushing and shoving out there. They're not calling anything.
My thing is, it's one thing to have physicality in the playoffs. It is another to... I just like some of this isn't even basketball. Like watching Stephon Castle drive, are you not always just thinking a whistle's going to get blown?
Yeah, you just bully your way to the hoop. And
the bodies
and people
are
texting that in about Brunson, and why aren't we bringing up Brunson, who foul baits a little bit, and he's, you know, falling to the ground. And I'm sure there's some of that that goes both ways. I'm not trying to act like the only calls.
It's not only San Antonio.
Right,
yeah,
they're only favoring San Antonio. There's a balance there. I tend to lean with the idea, and I thought the biggest issue that I had with the foul calls was in the fourth quarter. That discrepancy early and the second half free throw discrepancy where New York has a lead in what was it, 22-8 in the second half of game three. That's a big discrepancy in free throw attempts in the second half of an NBA Finals game. I don't mind the physicality as long as you are consistent with the physicality. If you let them get away with stuff in the first half and then in the early fourth quarter it's a foul, that's a problem because you've set the precedent the entire game. So if you're going to let them play, let them bump around, push around a little bit, I'm totally fine with that. Just keep it that way for the entire game.
Well, game four is tonight. We'll have a little bit more on this in the final hour. We'll get to start a story in the final hour. What do you want to get to next? Kickoff hour three.
I have a way to make your voice heard, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh,
share your voice to the process.
I had my voice. I shared it this
morning.
Did
you share your voice? I shared my voice yesterday.
Okay, great. We'll talk about sharing our voices and how it pertains to this program. Hour three, Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.